Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Euro 2020. The big dogs have entered the fray. France cruise to victory over an out-of-ideas Germany. Portugal leave it late for a huge 3 points. And Wales prepare for a huge game here in Baku. We'll look ahead to that, as well as examining exactly what's going on with VAR. The dreaded nonetheless. This is the Game Euro 2020. I'm Hugh Wizencroft. This is episode 5 of our daily Euro 20 podcast. If you're enjoying them, make sure you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. And of course, make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times right now for all the best of what's going on across the continent. If you sign up today, you can get it for less than £1 per day. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/thegame. To start your free trial. To help me through today's action, as the first set of group games, of course, come to a close, Alison Rudd, Gregor Robertson, and a man who I've only just realised today very closely resembles Timo Werner, Tom Roddy. First time you've heard it, Tom?
Yeah, it is actually, yeah. I don't quite know how to respond to it.
Tom Roddy, get on side now.
You're in Amsterdam, I'm in Baku. How are you enjoying it, Tom?
Yeah, it's good. I'm here with the Euros, the man with the best name in the Euros, Denzel Dumfries. What a player he's turned out to be, and what a story he's got. But absolutely incredible name. But no, it's all good here.
Good. I'm glad. Let's get to it. The big game of the day, of course, the one everyone was waiting for. France 1, Germany 0. Possibly a scoreline that flattened the Germans. Sheer class from France, I thought, start to finish. It looked like Germany hadn't even shown up with a plan. I didn't see any real pattern of play from them. Very underwhelming, Alison. The good news, before we get to Germany, let's assess France. The good news is they didn't even need to get out of third gear tonight, the world champions.
Oh, you're so result-oriented, Hugh, are you not?
It's going to be fractious today. I can feel it.
That was performance-orientated. France were brilliant. Germany were awful.
They got lucky because it was an own goal. They made some bad decisions up front. I don't think that was the perfect performance. What was absolutely impressive about France, I think, is that... And I followed them a lot at the World Cup, so I saw them evolve through the tournament. And it does look almost like they sort of had a few weeks rest and they're back on the merry-go-round and better. But they don't play. They've got star names through the team, but they play like a team that has no stars at all. So they do that. I was sitting there thinking, who do they look like? And I decided they look like a cross between Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and Wigan Athletic. They buzz. They buzz around the ball. They buzz. When you're in possession against them, it doesn't matter how famous or how expensive the player, they just act like they've got nothing in their arsenal at all other than intense passion and ability to be athletic. So they suffocated Germany almost throughout. And that lack of ego, that commitment to the whole Borg-like in Star Trek terms, was impressive. They've gone to a new level in that take away the ego principle, which is what is going to make them incredibly hard to break down. But I don't think going forward they do as much as they could do. It was strange, really. There wasn't enough of Mbappe's pace. There wasn't enough of the creativity. It seemed to be solely focused on, oh, we've taken a relatively early lead. Let's just make sure Germany get a bit depressed.
Why not just do what you're good at? Let's be perfectly honest here, Alison. I mean, it could have easily been on another day a 3-0 win. Gregor, what do you think?
It could easily on another day have been a 1-1 and the group of death looking very peculiar.
No, I don't agree. I think France were very comfortable. They let Germany have the ball.
Oh, they weren't. Like, you cannot say they were comfortable, Hugh, because they worked so hard.
Where were the clear-cut goal-scoring opportunities? Name a good chance that Germany had.
That's because I've just explained they suffocate and they suffocate, but they at the expense of being creative. Most of possession was Germany.
I can agree. You're watching them thinking, yeah, they're a hell of an efficient team, but you know the stars they have in that team. You think could they be slightly more taking it to Germany a little bit more? And they were. You know, Alison's right. They're a very very efficient team. I mean, this is not anything new. We've seen this. That's how they've had success in the last competitions. They've always got Mbappe's pace on the break. That's, you know, they've always got that. They've always got someone with a bit of gold dust and magic in their boots, like Griezmann or Pogba, who switch a play. Or, you know, they've got that bit of star quality, and they've got the kind of, you know, they're very obdurate. But I think you're being harsh on Germany personally. After the way we've seen them come into this competition, you know, Joachim Löw's on his way out. He's overstayed his welcome, actually, bringing back Müller and, you know, I remember saying Hummels is going to have a nightmare. I thought Germany were all right. I thought they
knocked it around to no real effect.
No, but they didn't just knock it around. They knocked it around with some pace and purpose. France were very hard to break down, and I think they don't have a focal point. They, you know, the way that they lined up front, Gnabry, Havertz, Müller, you know, they don't really have a striker on the pitch per se. So I don't think they really had, they weren't really in the game. They didn't have an effect on the game. So that's got to be a worry, a concern for them. But as I say, France were very, very solid. And I think you're being a little bit harsh on Germany personally. I still think they've got a chance.
I thought France put in the performance of the first set of group matches. What did you think, Tom?
Yeah, I agree. But I still agree in that I don't think they really got out of second gear. I mean, comparing the two teams, when you actually compare the two teams, France feel like, I mean, they almost feel like they're a club team and they've bought these players because they just work and fit so well together. And in comparison, Germany they sort of lacked that balance. They didn't feel complete. I think Gregor's right. The fact that they were missing a striker up front, and that was what they needed. That was really what they needed. But with France, they had a vision that we all expected to see. And I mean, so many players in that team are just a pleasure to watch, and none more so than Kylian Mbappe. I mean, it feels like a glitch on the TV when you're watching at home, when he started racing on Max Hummels, or a cheat code of some sort to catch him up. It's just absolutely.
He did well, you know. Yeah, you know, everyone said, first of all, my God, the poor guy, and then, you know, just to get a kind of a stud on the ball,
bad
he did
touch.
Brilliantly.
Bad touch from
Mbappe. It was. He cut across him, but he didn't give it quite enough. It wasn't quite enough pace on the touch. Mm. If it had just been another yard on that ball, Hummels out the game. But Hummels did well to stick into that. God almighty. Imagine chasing him.
How can you say you don't think, Tom, that France didn't get out of third gear? They put in a fifth gear shift in defence.
Griezmann hitting back and throwing and flying into tackles. You know, that is the thing. You have to give them credit in that. You know, we'll say they've got this the best lineup of, you know, best array of talent of stars in the competition, but they are putting in a shift, every single one of them, and not, you know, not in a way of kind of dominating possession and playing, you know, sexy soccer. They a lot of the time are behind the ball and working very, very hard to hold on to a lead. So, you know, they deserve credit for that. But as I say, you're watching it sometimes thinking they've got this galaxy of stars here and they really they're playing football. Sometimes it's like akin to Atletico Madrid.
What I mean is that I don't think they played. I've seen France play better. I've seen them more. I thought they could have damaged Germany far more than they actually did. That's what I mean. I think I was quite surprised with. I wouldn't describe Germany as poor, but I expected. I thought that especially the first half an hour or so, it was so one-sided, and I thought they were missing something slightly in the final third. That there were a few misplaced passes. Kante, Griezmann, Mbappe. If they come off, then I think it would have been over in the first half, and it was even more one-sided than I was expecting it to be. But I thought Germany grew into the game.
I'm going to come to Germany's performance in a while in a little bit more detail, but I think we need to praise a couple of France players, maybe that one that does maybe get the recognition of late, another that doesn't. Paul Pogba, I wanted to talk about him. So many people saying, are we finally going to praise him? You know, every time he gets his haircut or does something that maybe the pundits don't agree with, then he's constantly criticised. Alison, what did you make of his performance tonight?
Well, he's a different player for France, isn't he? Deschamps must say, you either do what I want you to do or I'm not interested in you. And he's decided, well, I want to be in this trophy winning team, so I'm going to play to what the manager wants and just go for it, but while being incredibly disciplined. He managed to look relaxed, talented and full of effort, which you just don't see those three things from him at the same time with United.
Well, I tend to agree with you. What do you think, Gregor?
Yeah, no, I think that's broadly speaking true. He's playing alongside Kante, and Kante can make whoever plays beside Kante has the best midfield job in football, really, because the amount of work that guy does is just incredible. You know, it's not new again, but you just see him covering so much ground and popping up, and you know, just reading two steps ahead. Just must be a joy to play with, but James Gerbrandt wrote a really good piece actually just before the Euros about Pogba and his kind of journey and what makes him, why he's kind of, he feels, I think it's about feeling the love and feeling kind of he's among a bit of a band of brothers. And almost like, I think he feels that he wants to be a bit of a leader in the group, a leader in that team, and takes it upon himself to kind of, to be that. And there's no doubt his form for France is completely different. And he was very good today, kind of bestriding that midfield. I'm still to decide whether he meant that pass or not, because it looked like a sort of outside of the foot to Kylian Mbappe. Mbappe almost looked like that as well. He kind of looked like he's about to throw his arms up and then, oh, hang on a minute, there might be another chance here. But yes, certainly Pogba for France is a different player.
I think there's something about the quality around him as well. The fact that, you know, at United in the seasons he's been there, they haven't really been the team you've expected to win the title, to go on and win cups and trophies. Whereas, you know, France arrive at this tournament and they are heavy, heavy favourites. And there's a reason for that. And I think he clearly believes that they are too, and knows the talent he has around him. And you took the words right out of my mouth, Gregor, with N'Golo Kante. I mean, there's a beautiful balance there where they just seem to they look so comfortable together, but complement each other so much as well.
Do we see any weaknesses in the France team, first of all? If I could pick anything, I think Hugo Lloris could...
Yeah, the goalkeeper.
Hugo Lloris.
Yeah, he's the only one.
I still think Kimpembe is slightly rash sometimes, and he could have a rick in him, but really...
It's probably because he trains with Mbappe.
Yeah, that must be fun. Jesus.
I didn't see many weaknesses. I saw them hold Germany, and yeah, okay, I've criticised them, but it's still Germany with many, many good players. They held them at arm's length, as far as I was concerned. I thought it was an excellent performance, you know, especially defensively. But I do think that Germany's approach helped France, because why would you allow them to play on the counter-attack when you know they've got Kylian Mbappe, you know, and that's the way that they like to play, win the ball back and try and break. They like I say, they could have conceded another couple of goals off it. Gregor, what did you make of Germany's tactical setup and approach?
As I say, I thought they were better than I thought they were going to be, having seen the kind of the way that they've come into the competition. As I say, up front was their biggest issue, in that they really didn't have a focal point, and it looked like, you know, they're playing as 3-4-3 now, and it looks like they're trying to do something new. It's like a change in direction, although it's really the end of an era. It looks a little bit muddled, that's what I'm trying to say, and it's not. Mm. But still, they have a lot of good players. They have Gundogan and Kroos and Kimmich right back. He was excellent as well. You know, yeah. they have some real talent, and I still think they've got a chance of getting out this group and progressing. I think with the quality of players, Sané to come on and Werner to come on, you know, they have real quality. It just looks a little bit muddled, and I think probably, you know, that's a combination of Joachim Löw's kind of tenure coming to an end, and he looks like he's trying to do something different with largely the same group of players.
For me, it was a lot of good players just playing football. I just didn't see their plan at all. I thought they're great at keeping the ball, so many great midfielders, they're knocking it about. When it gets down to that final third, it's like they're just playing. I actually thought it looked like a France defensive training exercise for about 15 minutes of that game. It looked like they could have gone for another half an hour. Germany wouldn't have scored. I don't know if I'm being harsh. Alison, how big a problem does the Germany boss, Jürgen Löw, have?
I think he'll be clever enough to be able to actually show them back the game and look at ways that they can improve, rather than just hold their hands up and say, we can't do any better. I'd be interested in what you all thought about Kai Havertz, who I thought his movement was good, but I've from that slightly odd noise, I suspect, I don't know, I just sort of feel like he needs to grow into the tournament the way he's had sort of grown into the Premier League.
With Timo Werner on the bench, with Leroy Sané on the bench, it was sort of a choice between three players who haven't had the greatest seasons, in my opinion. And I think Kai Havertz was there for maybe the creative element, the chance of a spark compared to the others. But I think he might change it in the next game, because I didn't see anything that made you feel like he has to start again, except for those things that you mentioned. But I think the other players can add another dimension. Leroy Sané, we saw, you know, didn't get much time on the pitch, nor did Timo Werner, but they both offer something a little bit different. I don't think he's got much to lose, to be perfectly honest. Maybe Havertz will start, but he could certainly tweak a couple of the players. Kimmich was brilliant, I thought, but he might go into a midfield role as well, because I didn't feel like they had that strong sort of defensive midfielder. Of course, Kroos and Gundogan are brilliant as well, but it does feel like he's got sort of, you know, many more questions than things answered tonight, even though I think, yeah, you're right. Okay, you've convinced me. They weren't that bad in the game. They weren't that bad. That's all I'll say about them. They weren't that bad. But I still think, I don't know. Well, hold on before I carry on too much. I'm sticking with my initial prediction that they're going to be the team that has the biggest concerns and possibly don't even qualify for the knockout stages.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A change of seasons means adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow, or all of the above on the same day. This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. With all-condition traction and materials and features to keep you comfy and dry no matter what, you'll be ready for anything. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, also in Group F, Portugal left it extremely late to beat Hungary, a flattering scoreline possibly, 3-0 in Budapest. Cristiano Ronaldo's double means he is now the highest goal scorer in European Championship history. Tom, where did Portugal's performance rank against France and Germany, do you think?
I thought it was very impressive, especially in the second half. I just think that combination of Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be devastating. I mean, that's his second goal was incredible. The move, when you watched it back, the move and the interchange of play was stunning, really. And their real test is to come, because we can't forget that they're playing against Hungary, and a very spirited Hungary side who we saw the benefit of the only full stadium in the competition so far. I mean, there was one point in the first half you might have seen where one of their defenders beat Ruben Dias to a header and he punched the air like he'd scored a goal. And that was their opposition today. So they've got bigger tests to come. The one thing, though, is you kind of look back at 2016 and the side that won it, and you just think they only improved, really. I mean, Ruben Dias for José Font, Bruno Fernandes has come in now, and Jota, and they're just so much even better, I think, than they were back then. And I think they do complement each other as well. I mean, for years we've also been waiting for kind of Renato Sanchez to fulfill his potential, and I thought he really benefited them actually as well. When he came off the bench, he was direct and brought the speed that they sort of lacked a little bit at times in the first half. But when they kicked into gear, they were really impressive.
Alison, do you think Portugal showed today that they're going to cause lots of problems in Euro 2020?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think they didn't really play anywhere as close. They were like malfunctioning brilliance most of the time. Cristiano missed a sitter. Jota, most chances in the first half fell to Jota, and he didn't make bad attempts at them, but there was always another option that he should have taken. It was like they were the opposite of France in a way. They were a collective of very, very, you know, high-paid, famous stars who were keen to show off. Interestingly, not all bowing to the cult of Cristiano, but prepared to express themselves. And they looked like they were finding their way as a team. And while they did that, Hungary, who have no stars at all, were slowly getting into the game. You did feel they worked very hard in the first half, Hungary, and they'd be stretched and tired in the second half. Didn't work out that way. In fact, they took energy from the crowd and started to threaten. They scored. It was offside, but not by much. They were beginning, and that really sapped the morale of Portugal. I mean, they left it very, very late to score, and they were starting not quite to panic, I would say, but they were starting to look worried. They got a lucky goal because there was a deflection on the shot, and then they just suddenly went into, I don't know, Hungary panicked. Portugal suddenly looked like a glimpse of what they could be when they're at their very best, and Ronaldo's in that bullying mood where one minute he looks like he would, you know, knock your house down with a shot, and then the next minute it looks like he's pirouetting through Swan Lake. He's so, so adaptable. And then he starts, you know, breaking records. If you've got a player like that in the team and you're breaking records as a team and you're the holders, why wouldn't you think you're going to stir the tournament up? So I would imagine, even though in the press conference afterwards the manager looked like he'd just been given a sausage roll that had gone off 6 days ago, but they could go all the way again, definitely. Because I don't think they've clicked yet. I mean, this is them not quite clicking.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Gregor, Hungary, will they feel slightly aggrieved given all the hard work and how long they stayed in the game? And do you think they could possibly take some points in this group?
Oh, I mean, they definitely deserve credit. They held on for 84 minutes. Rolled the luck at times, but you're going to have to do that. But as you say, you know, they worked very hard. They were pretty obdurate and, you know, worked extremely hard defensively and were compact. And they, you know, they were a fraction away from taking the lead on the break. Obviously, a goal chopped off for offside. But no, I think the no is the answer. I haven't seen the rest of the group in the group of death. I think we kind of knew that from the start, and I think we know even more now. But Portugal, yeah, I agree with everyone really that's been said. I think that they are a bit like France, and well, they've probably got the second best squad on paper after France, I would say, or starting 11, certainly attacking. You know, that front four, ridiculous. Jota, Fernandes, Silva, and Ronaldo. Still got Felix to come. You know, they've got some real, real talent there. And they were quite fortunate, you know, to get that breakthrough, as Alison said, from a deflection. So I think there's more to come from them. I think there's more to come from them and more to come from France. We'll see if there's more to come from Germany, but I still think Germany will beat Hungary quite easily.
I don't know. I'm just thinking about that Hungary Germany match. You never know. And anyway, we'll see what happens in the group of death. Plenty more big games to come, of course. But I wanted to talk about the officiating because so many people seem to be absolutely delighted with the officiating so far. Over the moon. What's the point in VAR if nobody uses it? Robin Gosens almost took Benjamin Pavard's head off today. There was no sort of head injury assessment. He never went off due to concussion. No one. He just played on.
That's two separate issues.
No, it's not. He came in 6 foot high and he need a player in the head. What's VAR for if it's not going to tell the referee to at least have a look at a player being kneed in the head by a flying wing back? Come on, Gregor.
We had this argument when Tarkowski did a kind of clearance with no knowledge of a player coming towards him and kicked. Who was it? Kicked in the head. So against Newcastle, I forget. We had the same discussion. I don't think, you know, that Peter Walton came on and said you could argue it was reckless. He was the ball when the ball's coming in that.
If you're using Peter Walton to justify your argument, you've already gone down the wrong road, Gregor.
Is he not part of the Times family? Anyway, let's move on. But you know, the ball came in. It comes in at such a pace. It's a height that kind of. As you, the attacking player, you're going to throw yourself at it, and you don't really care which part of your body you're throwing at it. You want to get something on the ball behind. You want to get as much of you behind the ball as you can. And Pavard had a very brave header, and yes, he caught him. I think, you know, it could just about have been a booking, but I don't think there's any discussion about it being a red card.
Separate issue altogether.
Because it wasn't worth checking.
You don't think that was worth checking?
No, not at all. Not at all. And if we're going to talk about the officials, it's been brilliant. It's been brilliant that we've not had to have this conversation really until a weekend, and saying like VAR is not a kind of continual conversational point. It's not ruining games. It's not slowing games. We even discussed before, just before I'm coming on. I like the fact that we're not seeing the lines for offsides. I don't want to see it.
This is the height of corruption.
Get the decision, and come back and show us later when we've got time. I don't really see working through it. Just get the decision quick and just tell us what it is and let's get on with the game. And we'll come back and we'll analyse it later. And we've got to hope they've got decent officials working in the truck. And they seem to, I think they've got it down. They've got it down. We've, you know, been hypercritical of VAR this season, and rightly so. You know, it's been used when it had to have been used so far in this competition. I think it's been excellent.
I'm with Gregor on the Pavard situation. I didn't think there was an issue there for that VAR needed to get involved in. If there was one, I would have been interested to have seen what replays would have thought of the Rudiger's mouth coming close to Pogba's shoulder and back. What they would have made of that. That was probably more of a.
I mean,
VAR
you can say it looked
me.
Like he bit him, Tom. He's not going to sue you. Everyone who hasn't seen it's like, hold on a minute, his mouth coming close to his shoulder and back. Sounds more romantic than anything else.
Sorry, it's midnight here.
It was very odd. I mean, he's an odd character, Rudiger. He's a bit manic on the pitch, and I think he can have a bit of a man possessed sometimes. But I get, you know, yeah, he was treading a fine line there. But again, I wouldn't say that had to have been looked at personally.
But you're missing the point, Hugh. You're missing the point, Hugh. The point is that, well, that's okay. forget whether we like VAR or not. If you're going to have it there, what it should be doing is monitoring the game to avoid gross miscarriages of justice. So there is still communication between the people in the booth and the man on the pitch. When what they're doing is they're clearly saying to him, it's okay, don't worry, you've not missed something significant. You don't want to have to stop every single thing that might or might not be significant. Then you get down to it being pernickety and decisions being made that bear no relation to the game or the mood of the game or what people worry about. What you want at the end of it is for people like Gregor to be going, oh, that was brilliant. I didn't feel robbed. I didn't feel my emotions were torn to shreds for no reason. The games have flowed. And no one's gone around thinking, injustice, injustice, if only someone had been able to look at that on a monitor. It hasn't been like that. It's just flowed more or less the way you'd want it to if you have to have VAR, which is there's a dialogue we don't need to hear because the man in the middle has the authority and he's only going to be interrupted if he's missed something that's going to make everybody turn off the telly and boo.
I'm not even sure about the accuracy of the lines. I'm not even sure. I think at some point we'll be calling blue murder and saying corruption's going on because it it all seems to be in the hands of UEFA. Yes, I said it. There's something going on here with this officiating. Why would they be so overly officious in every other mode of football, but not in the European Championship? We'll get to the bottom of it, I'm sure. Let's quickly look ahead to tomorrow, though. Group A is back. Italy against Switzerland, the Alps derby. Turkey versus Wales, which is some sort of animal derby. Tom, what do you expect from Wales?
Animal derby. I think we saw before the competition the debate about whether Kiefer Moore should be playing. And as you've seen firsthand, Hugh, it was from that first game that he's the focal point that we were just talking about, Germany missing. That's what Germany need, Kiefer Moore. And so, yeah, I think to get that point as well from the first game, that they needed that. I think you saw the spirit that created in a tournament which hasn't had the best preparations for that side. So I think that it puts them in good stead, really. What's it been like around Wales over the last couple of days?
It's been really good. I spoke to Harry Wilson, spoke to Nico Williams. They might come into the starting lineup. I think Wales have to play a 3-4-3. They have to. Joe Roden and Chris Meppen were getting absolutely murdered by Brailen Mbolo. And I think Burak Yilmaz, who we know had a great season in Liga and helped Lille win the title there, I think he actually had a good game against Italy. He was just really isolated. So if Turkey get more bodies around him, it's going to be an even bigger test for Roden and Meppen if they play in a back four, essentially two centre-backs. So I think maybe Ben Davies will drop into a back three. I know some people want Chris Gunter to come back into the team, but I say play with wing-backs. Now, I think that will make them a lot more solid. I still think they'll have a threat going forward. I actually think Wales will win, but the atmosphere is going to be basically like a Turkey home game. The Turkish president's here on, funnily enough, an aptly timed official visit. So I think he'll be watching as well. So yeah, it definitely will feel like a sense of a Turkish home game. And so there was absolutely no real talk of football ahead of that first game between Wales and Switzerland. And now there are Turkey football shirts and half and half scarves and flags gone up everywhere. And it's suddenly like, oh, there's a football match in town. So it's definitely changed in sort of the atmosphere around Euro 2020. The Wales players, they say it's going to spur them on. I think one of the good things is there, it's like a running track around the pitch in the Baku Olympic Stadium, so they will still be about 25 metres away from the crowd, which actually I think might help them. But I think it will be a tough game, but I really believe Wales can win and will win. I think they've got enough. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I just don't know how it'll go.
One thing you've got to say is you can't see Turkey being as bad as they were in the opening game. You know, they came in with there was a bit of expectation about them, you know, perhaps a dark horse, and they were swept aside. So I think, you know, we'd expect to see a reaction from them. Let's just say that. And as you say, it's going to feel like, you know, I think Rob Page said it's going to feel like an away game, really. A home game for Turkey. So it'll be very interesting. And I think, you know, I think Wales could probably draw and still have half a chance, you know, because Italy will be, I would imagine Italy will be qualified, and that'll be when they go into the final game. It's going to be right into the final game for them, absolutely.
Alison, you know I love predictions. You get the final word today. Wales against Turkey. Go on.
Okay, just to wind you up, five all.
Remotely serious. This is the Times. Come on, Alison.
Well, I mean, it's probably going to be a very tight game with lots of that sort of jeery, whistly stuff you hear. And it'll be hot, even though it's evening. And I agree with you completely. No one seems to know why Robert Page changed his system. Why would you do that on the start of a tournament? He needs to go to a back three. So if he does that, and Wales can be, I don't know, I think he wants them to go in as the sort of the top dog of the game. I think he wants them to have a sort of sense of superiority and sort of not give the Turkish fans anything to cling to. I don't know if you've picked this up, but it seems to be this idea that if Turkey start the game poorly, the fans are going to turn on them. Do you think that's true? Or is this a Welsh myth to make them feel like they can do a U-turn on this one? But is that likely to happen? I don't know enough about what the locals will do.
The relationship can be very critical, but I don't know, because it's been such a long time since so many fans will have been in the stadium to see Turkey. There's probably up to 30,000. So I don't know if they'll all be turning on the team if they have a bad sort of first half an hour.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because they did so well last time at the Euros because they were the underdog and nobody took them seriously. And they did ride the wave of what you can do with good team spirit and a few classy players. So I wouldn't say teams are scared of Wales, but they do look at them a bit like, oh, they're going to be difficult. It's a different mindset, isn't it? It's one of those difficult matches to know how to pitch it. You know, should Wales go into that acting like they're rank outsiders and they just have to put it all on the line and play with as much passion as they can summon? Or do they do this? We can control the game. We're the superior team. We played better in our opening game than they did. It's a tricky one to navigate, I think. So it probably won't be 5-5 and it'll probably be quite boring, maybe.
So did we get to a prediction in the end?
It's going to be 5-5 or 0-0.
Speaking of Cristiano Ronaldo breaking records, Alison Rudd with one of her own, our longest prediction, I think, for a game. But I'm very expertly put in the end. We'll see exactly how Wales get on here in Baku. Tom Roddy in Amsterdam, Gregor Robertson and Alison Rudd in London. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the game Euro 2020. And for you, just make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times right now for all the best award-winning journalism from Euro 2020. If you sign up today, you can get less than £1 per day. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/the game to start your free trial. We'll see you tomorrow.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no,
yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.